Chapter 12 takes place after the line in the sand. Jake's alarm clock goes off at precisely 6:15 in the morning, and he immediately rolls over and hits the snooze. The snooze button is his favorite feature of his alarm clock. Actually, his alarm clock is his favorite feature of his alarm clock. He's never had one until now. Before moving in with Chris and Victoria, he was woken every day with a loud rapping at his door and his mother's shrill, "Get up!" And when Rose said, "Get up," he scrambled out of bed and dove into his clothes as quickly as possible. There's a lot he's never told any of the others about the way things were in the house he grew up in. So he could set the clock for 6:20 or even 6:30 and still be on time for school. But he sets it for 6:15 because he really likes having the time in the morning to relax and lounge in bed for a little while. When the alarm goes off a second time at 6:22, he rolls out of bed without issue. Okay, there is some yawning. He enjoys getting up before sunrise about as much as any other teenager. Chris seems to be the same way, to be honest. Jake never sees him in the morning, but Victoria is always up, dressed, and in the kitchen. Since Allison showers at night, that means he has no competition for the bathroom. He ducks inside and turns on the water. The quick shower wakes him up the rest of the way. He gets dressed in a t-shirt and loose corduroys, and then pushes a brush through his hair. It's getting kind of long now. He likes it long. He can pull it back into a little ponytail at the nape of his neck, and it doesn't get in his way. He's never been allowed to have long hair before. His mother was always cutting it the second it started to look unruly, which, on Jake, was pretty much all the time. His hair is curly. Neither of his parents have curly hair, so maybe they just don't understand. And it looks fine short or long, but not in between. His mother never cut it short enough for it to look good, so he's always just had a mop of messy curls on the top of his head, getting in his way. 2 weeks previous at breakfast, he had pushed his hair out of his face and remarked, "I really should get a haircut." Victoria glanced up from her toast and said, "All right." "But I don't want to," Jake blurted out, before he could think better of the idea. Another glance, another even, "All right." Jake wasn't sure how to handle that, so he just didn't say anything. Let it ride. And he started pulling his hair back into ponytails, and nobody said anything about it. Actually, that wasn't true. A couple of girls at school remarked, "Your hair looks cute like that." And he had been stymied for several days over the fact that girls thought anything about him was cute. "It is, though," Lydia said 2 days later, pulling the front half of it up and securing it with a hair tie. "It looks better long." "That's kind of a girly hairdo," Jake protested, squirming. "Tell that to Aragorn, son of Arathorn," Lydia replied. "I'm not Aragorn," Jake said. "Nobody's perfect," Lydia said with a shrug. Now, looking at himself in the mirror, he draws himself up a little, squares his shoulders, and pulls the front of his hair back. "A day may come when the courage of men fails," he says, and then laughs at himself. He gets dressed and leaves the bedroom, heading downstairs. "Good morning, Aunt Victoria," he says, going into the kitchen. His aunt is standing by the kitchen counter. She looks over, smiles, and says good morning. A bare moment later, the toaster pops and his breakfast appears. While Styles is all extravagance and flailing and overdrive in the kitchen, Victoria is the exact opposite, the picture of precision and efficiency. Jake has been living with his aunt and uncle for over 6 months, and he can count the number of times his breakfast hasn't been ready when he gets downstairs on one hand. 9 times out of 10, his toast will come up within 10 seconds of his entrance into the kitchen. It's multigrain today, and he immediately negates the healthiness by smearing butter and honey all over it, then sitting down with a glass of milk. A year previous, he would have sat in absolute silence, kept his head down, tried to look at Victoria as little as possible. She seemed nice, but then again, Rose could seem nice too, when she was in the mood. He tried not to be noticed. He ate his rye toast without complaint, even though he hated rye bread. It wasn't that he was afraid of Victoria, precisely. He was wary of her, feeling her out a little bit at a time. But he was 98% sure that she wouldn't hurt him. It was just that he lived in constant, paralyzing fear that one day Chris and Victoria would wake up and realize what a mistake they had made, taking him in. He woke up with it a lot at first. Bad dreams where his mother and father came to get him and punished him for leaving. They had talked about putting him in counseling, but Chris had said, "Let's just give him some time." And so they did. There wasn't any one defining event, one eureka moment, where he had accepted his new life. It came gradually, over weeks and months. Little things made the biggest difference. Chris saying thanks when Jake passed him the potatoes, Victoria giving him a few extra dollars in his allowance because he polished the banisters and scrubbed the front hallway floor before company came over, Chris offering to teach him how to drive after he turned 16, Victoria asking whether he liked mushrooms on his pizza instead of just ordering without consulting him. And then, of course, there was Allison, who had gone well above and beyond the call of duty when it came to making Jack feel like family. Not just pack, not because her alpha had said so, but family, because she wanted to. Allison, playing video games with him in the evenings and laughing good-naturedly when she loses, but never gloating when she wins. Allison, showing him around town so he knew where all the cool shops were. Allison, always engaging him when he was too nervous or shy to ask Chris or Victoria something. Running interference if she had to, and never making fun of him for it. Allison emailing and texting and Skyping with him all the time while she was in Neptune, so he didn't get bored or lonely. So things got better, and Jake didn't really notice it, not the way people around him did. By the time winter rolled around, it was natural for him to say, "Pass the salt," without flinching, and look Chris in the eye when they talked, and ask Victoria if she wanted him to wipe down the windows and the mirrors, or was it just the windows? And it feels natural to sit there in the morning and munch on his toast while Victoria is doing one of a dozen things in the kitchen, and then stand up and say, "Okay, I'm off to school." And Victoria says, "Have a good day." Like she actually means it. He doesn't grab a lunch from the refrigerator or run to catch the bus. There are certain things that Styles negotiated for when he and Chris had the pack or not pack discussion. One of them was that Styles already makes lunches for half the pack anyway, and he's going to include Jake. And the other was that he'll get rides to and from school. Of course, when Allison's home, which is 3 or 4 times a week, he just hitches a ride with her. The other mornings, someone always swings by to pick him up on the way. It's hardly ever Styles, because he picks up Erica and Boyd. But Scott will get him if he has the car that day. Or Danny or Lydia will, because they both live fairly nearby. The awkwardness that Jake originally felt around these people has likewise evaporated. They're his friends now. Even the people he previously would have thought too cool or beautiful to ever notice his existence. Danny picks him up today, and they chat about computers on the way to school. They're there about 5 minutes after 7, which gives them 10 minutes before the first bell rings. Jake trots over to say hi to the others. As usual, Styles is the first to greet him, giving him the hand clasp, backslap, bro hug type thing that Jake has seen the guys in the pack exchange. It's not exactly a pack greeting, but it's not exactly the casual greeting two friends would exchange either. He had been surprised, at first, that Styles had actually obeyed Chris's edict that Jake wouldn't be joining the pack anytime soon. "Give him time to get his feet under himself," Chris said, Give him time to decide what he wants out of his life. Styles nodded and said that seemed reasonable, given where Jake was coming from. Jake had thought at the time that Styles was just saying that to placate Chris, and would go right on adopting Jake into his pack. But Styles hadn't. Oh, he hadn't abandoned Jake. He made it very clear that he was there whenever Jake wanted to come over or if he needed to talk. But after that, he backed off and let Jake have some room to settle in. It took Jake 2 months to realize that Styles really did respect Chris Argent every bit as much as he said he did. And not only that, but Styles respected him. Styles was giving him time to make the decision for himself. The offer had been made, and it would stand, but it was up to Jake whether or not he ever joined the pack. So Styles greets him at school, but doesn't greet him the way he does the others. They chat for a few minutes. Not just Jake and Styles, but the entire pack. Styles is talking about this project he wants Jake's help on, getting them all organized for their college applications. Lydia's done all of hers already, of course, but some of the others are still researching and getting their stuff together. Styles in particular is behind, because he's always so busy with other things. He wants to make pro versus con lists for the different schools in San Francisco that they're looking at, and he wants a spreadsheet with who requires what, essays, letters of recommendation, etc. And he wants Jake to help him put it together. Not just for him, but for Isaac and Scott and some of the others who are getting overwhelmed by the entire process. Jake had discovered fairly early on in Beacon Hills that if he has one God-given gift, it's a talent for organization. He had helped Chris do inventory on his weapons, a not inconsiderable process, and suddenly their basement was more organized than it had ever been in anyone's life. Everything had neat labels and was grouped with similar items, and the things he used most were easily accessible. Chris had looked at Jake like he was from another planet. When Styles found out about that, he had been thrilled, far beyond what Jake himself felt was appropriate. He thought it was probably the world's lamest superpower. But Styles didn't seem to think so. He immediately assigned Jake to help Danny and Allison with a project they're doing, putting together a list of all the different hunters, their territories, and their attitudes about werewolves and other beasties. Danny's going to turn it into an app that any werewolf can download. "Safety in numbers is all well and good," Styles said when he told Jake about the project, "but safety in well-informedness is even better." "I don't think that's a word," Jake replied. "Cry about it," Styles said cheerfully. For obvious reasons, he doesn't share any classes with the rest of the pack. They're seniors now, and he's a sophomore. But he's made some friends. He's shy and uncertain, but gradually gravitates towards the other geeks and nerds who share similar interests. To be honest, it helps that everyone knows he's Allison's cousin and friends with Styles. The pack is viewed somewhat like superheroes by the lower classmen, and so they tend to look at Jake in awe, as if he's some sort of advanced groupie. The teachers like him too, because he's quiet and respectful and does his work. He's smart enough, he supposes. Not a genius like Lydia, but he's diligent and a good listener, which gets him further than a lot of his classmates. He starts the day with math, then goes to history. After that is Spanish class. He's thrilled to be in Spanish. His father insisted he take French because he's an Argent, but he wanted Spanish because he thinks it'll be more practical in the future. Chris and Victoria clearly don't care what language class he takes, as long as he gets good grades in it. After that, he has study hall, which he has no idea what to do with. He got a job as a library aide because the idea of 50 free minutes in school was so foreign to him. The librarians fuss over him a lot, and he likes being there. Then he has chemistry. Everyone hates Mr. Harris, who's perpetually grouchy. But Jake loves science, so chemistry is one of his favorite classes. Then he has lunch, And he has actual friends to sit with, something that's never happened before. Sometimes he goes over to their houses after school like a normal teenager, which is always novel for him. Then it's English, and his last class on this particular day is gym. They're playing basketball. He's terrible at it. He couldn't make a basket to literally save his life. They're playing 3-on-3, and Jake hangs on the outskirts and tries to do as little damage to his fellow teammates as possible. This is a strategy that works well for him, until a rogue ball from another court smacks him in the face. His glasses go flying off and hit the ground about 10 feet away. "Oh, shit!" he says, holding one hand to the side of his face. "Sorry, Jake," another teenager comes trotting over. "You okay?" "Hurts like a bitch," Jake says. Someone else retrieves his glasses. He says, handing them over. The frames are bent out of shape, the joint of the stems at a strange angle. "Oh, man," Jake says. "That's the third pair I've broken." "Sorry," the first kid says again, wincing. Vince Doc has jogged over at this point and gives the kid a cuff on the shoulder. "Keep track of your balls," he says, and everyone giggles. "Go sit on the bleachers, Argent." Why? Jake says. "Because you can't see?" Finstock says, raising his eyebrows at him. "Oh, right," Jake says, feeling stupid. He goes back into the locker room and changes. Since gym is his last class of the day, there's really no point in sticking around. He decides to get a head start on his homework. The locker rooms aren't exactly a place where he can do that, so he goes to sit in the library. There's still about 20 minutes of school left, and it's too cold to sit outside. Normally he would need a pass, but the librarians let him in because they know him. He's been there about 5 minutes when a girl he knows from his history and Spanish classes walks over. She glances around nervously, then says, "Hey, Jake, can I ask you something?" "Sure," Jake says. He blinks up at her owlishly, trying to identify her without squinting. Joy, right?" "Yeah. Oh, where are your glasses?" "They broke. Again," Jake says. "What's up?" Joy chews on her lip and looks around for a minute. You're friends with Stilinski and his crew, right?" she asks, and he blinks and nods at her. "Can I tell you something that's gonna sound crazy?" "Sure," Jake says. "I was walking home from school yesterday, right?" she says. "And I dropped my phone, and it fell, like, right on the sewer grate. So I go to pick it up, and I'm moving really slow, because I don't want it to get knocked in. And then I swear to God I saw eyes down in the sewer, looking up at me." "Jesus," Jake says. "What did you do?" "I grabbed my phone and ran away like a little girl," Joy says, laughing nervously. "But, I mean, it's Beacon Hills, right? And weird shit happens. So I knew I should tell somebody, but I knew I couldn't tell my parents. And I'd tell Styles or somebody, but they're, like, kind of larger than life and scary sometimes. But you're not, scary." "You really don't need to be scared of them," Jake says. "But I'll tell him. What color were they?" "Kind of greenish," she says. And Jake asks how big they were. And he takes some notes to give to Styles after school. Then the bell rings and he offers to give Joy a ride home without thinking about it, because she's obviously nervous. Joy turns 6 different shades of pink and says okay, so Jake texts Allison to let her know. Allison greets Joy with her usual level of sunshine, and then gives Jake this knowing sort of look, which makes Jake turn even pinker than Joy. They give her a ride home, and then Allison drives them back to the den. She's going to go practice her archery, she says, and Jake goes into the house. Fortunately, he has a spare pair of glasses there. Chris had gotten him several, since his glasses seemed to be perpetually breaking. He still can't believe that Chris hadn't killed him when he'd broken the second pair. He'd had to have Allison tell him about it because he'd been so afraid of Chris's reaction. He puts the spares on and dives into the refrigerator without a second thought to assemble a sandwich. He's a growing boy. Literally. He's grown 3 inches in the 7 months since Chris and Victoria took him in. It's a little quieter than usual. Styles and several of the others are at lacrosse practice. Boyd is at home taking care of his siblings, and Erica went with him. That leaves Lydia and Mac as the only ones in the den with him, since Allison has gone outside to practice. They're both in the study, although Jake doubts either of them are doing homework. Jake joins them there and pulls out his own work. Since he knows Styles is busy, he asks Lydia about the green-eyed sewer monster. "Could be a Grindylo," she says, "or a Kappa. Let me pull up the bestiary." They wind up getting involved in a 2-hour discussion of different folktales about water sprites, and how most people assume that they were invented by concerned parents who wanted to keep their children away from water they could drown in. Jake does his math and his chemistry homework while they talk. "Kappas aren't really anything to worry about," Lydia says, "but Grindylos can be nasty, and that seems more likely to her." "I live in Harry Potter," Mac announces to the ceiling, and the others laugh. Styles gets home with the others in a rush of noise and enthusiasm. Lydia and Jake brief him on their conclusions while he puts dinner together. He nods along with this and says they'll look into it in the morning before school, or possibly during school, if that becomes necessary. "I'm not wandering around sewers in the dark," he says, which seems very sensible to Jake. The sun is already setting. It's just after 5. Jake finishes up his homework while Styles makes a gigantic pile of taco meat and then dumps a bunch of taco fixings on the counters so everyone can help themselves. He talks to Boyd about UC East Bay's great education program and says to make sure he talks to at least 2 teachers about getting letters of recommendation. There's a good scholarship program that he thinks both he and Isaac will qualify for. Similarly, he's found a computer programming-based scholarship that might help Mac. After they've eaten, Allison says she's going home for the evening. She's agreed to help her mother with some things around the house. Lydia offers to come along and help. "Why are you always so eager to help Allison do her chores?" Jake asks her. "Because Allison's father is a silver fox," Mac says, and several of the girls burst out into giggles. "I don't know what that means," Jake says. "Probably all for the best," Styles says, stifling his laughter. Although he totally is. "There you go on the Kinsey scale again," Derek remarks, pressing his temple against Styles' cheek and nuzzling his hair. "What can I say? Sexuality is fluid." Jake decides to withdraw from the conversation before he can get scarred for life. Allison is laughing and Lydia is giving fake, "Well, I never," protests that she clearly doesn't mean at all as they head out to the car. This doesn't stop her from saying, "Hi, Mr. Argent," with a bounce in her voice that's only present around certain people. Now that Jake is thinking about it, most of those people are attractive older men. "So guess what, Dad?" Allison says, grinning. "There's a girl in Jake's class who has a crush on him." "What? No?" Jake protests. "She just wanted to talk to me about a sewer monster. That's not the same thing." Allison is still giggling. "Is that why she was giving you moogly eyes while we drove her home?" There were no moogly eyes," Jake protests. "What's her name?" Chris asks, glancing over from where he's unloading the dishwasher. "Joy," Jake says, flushing pink. "You like her," Allison sing-songs. "You should ask her to the Valentine's Day dance next month. She'd say yes. A girl can tell." "Maybe," Jake says, mostly under his breath. Allison and Lydia high-five. Chris shakes his head a little, although he looks more amused than anything else. Got a sec, Jake? He asks, and Jake immediately goes stiff and anxious, despite his best efforts.
Don't look so worried. It's nothing bad.
Oh, Jake says, as Allison and Lydia make themselves scarce.
Sure. Yeah. What's up? We got this in the mail today, Chris says, taking out an envelope. It's addressed to Jake in neat block handwriting, and it's been opened. I'm sorry that I invaded your privacy, but I wanted to make sure it wasn't anything that would hurt you. It's a letter from your brother.
Oh, Jake says again. He takes it, but he doesn't open it for a minute. He knows that Julian went to check in on his brother, that Julian himself explained why Jake had gone to live with Chris and Victoria. But he also knows that Philip was always his parents' favorite, and that Julian can't watch him all the time. God knows what Henry and Rose are telling him now that Jake is gone. But after a minute, he gets his hands to stop shaking long enough to open the letter. It's written very neatly, on lined notebook paper, in the same block printing that he recognizes as his brother's.
Dear Jake, Dad says I shouldn't write to you, so I'm giving this to Uncle Julian. He says he'll mail it for me. I hope you get it. Uncle Julian seems nice. Is it really true that you met the Alpha in Beacon Hills? Uncle Julian says you did, and that he's a good guy. Can werewolves be good guys? Uncle Julian says yes, but Dad says no. But Uncle Julian seems smarter than Dad, and he's been more places. I wish you could come home. I'm going to be in the school play this year. I only have 2 lines. That seems pretty serious. And I didn't know that. I want to be an actor when I grow up. I think it would be fun to be on TV. Mom says I can't be, though. She says me being a hunter is even more important now that you're gone. That doesn't make sense because you were never good at that stuff anyway. I like that stuff, though. I'm going to be in a karate tournament next month. Mom says I'd better win. In art class, we're learning about animals, so I drew a picture of a giraffe for you. I hope you like it. Maybe I can come visit you soon. Uncle Julian says he might take me over the summer if Dad lets him. Love, Philip. Jake puts the letter down and knuckles a few tears out of his eyes. Chris gives him a few moments, then says,
You okay?
Yeah, I think so, Jake says. I'm really glad he doesn't hate me. Chris looks about as uncomfortable with this as he usually does whenever topics involving emotion come up. He gives Jake a clap on the shoulder and says,
If you want to write back, Julian said he would make sure that Philip gets the letter.
Okay, Jake says. Thanks. Not that he has any idea what to write. He doesn't want to get his little brother in trouble, and he can't even imagine what his parents would do if they found a letter from him in Philip's stuff. He wishes he could send one a la Mission Impossible, where it would self-destruct after reading. After a few moments of awkward silence, Chris clears his throat and says,
Come give me a hand in the basement. I have some stuff I need to get put away.
Okay,
Jake says, and follows him downstairs. Homework done? Chris asks.
Yeah, Jake says, and waits. He always waits for Chris to say he wants to check and make sure. But Chris never does. He helps Chris sort out boxes of ammunition, and then Chris gives him a friendly shove and tells him to go do whatever, like he was last a teenager in the Ice Age and has no idea what Jake does with his time. What Jake does, usually, is play computer games or video games. Danny's been teaching him some computer programming. He does that for a little while, watches the newest Supernatural episode, plays some World of Warcraft, and heads down to the kitchen for a snack. Dinner was 4 hours previous. He eats a sandwich while he plays on his phone.
Don't stay up too late, Victoria says as she heads upstairs.
I won't, Jake says, and he doesn't. He's in bed by 10. It was, after all, a busy day.